glad you're with us today. As you know, Central Coast Voices is a program that we have put together specifically to help you get a better understanding of what's going on in our community, what the diversity of our community is about. We want to address today's choices and how they affect tomorrow's community. And boy, we're going to do a good job of that one today, I can assure you. We want to look at the long-term ramifications of change and progress in our society. And that's why we're here with Central Coast Voices. I'm your host today, Fred Monroe. If you're a regular listener, you know that Chris Kington Barker and I alternate weeks back and forth. If you're not a regular listener, ever, you listened last week and listened to Chris Kington, she'll be back next week. We do alternate weeks, as I said. Central Coast Voices is a project of the program called Action for Healthy Communities, which is a program of the Community Foundation of San Luis Obispo County. We put out a report every 3 years called Vital Signs, Understanding San Luis Obispo County. You can take a look at our most up-to-date and current report at actionslo.org. That's just actionslo.org. I suppose if you want to put www in front of it, you can do that too. But I believe that's not necessary on a regular basis anymore. We're going to talk about interesting things today. We're going to do something that I find very exciting, and that is generally talk about a topic that is moving so fast and is so new that it's like catching us all off guard because technology is moving, business is moving, and how we deal with it. We live in a growing world that's basically a lot different than it was 20 years ago. It's a lot different than it was 40 years ago. And the environment at Cal Poly is certainly a lot different than it was when a lot of us went to college. There is a program called the Center for Innovation and Entrepreneurship. And it's at Cal Poly, and it's CIE for short. And what they're really dealing with is ways to help founders and innovators incubate and develop their companies. They have a program that's called the Slow Hothouse. Today I've got three guests with us. Katarina Axelson, who is the co-founder and CEO of Bottlefly, Inc. And Eric Adler, who is the CEO of Flume. And Todd Nelson, who is the executive director of the Center for Innovation and Enterpriseship. And entrepreneurship. That's a mouthful. I'm sorry about that. I want to start to give you a little bit of background information on Katarina and Eric's company, companies. Katarina's company is called Bottlefly, and they're using technology to change the way people purchase wine in supermarkets and other retail environments. It's basically a software and a program that will help people understand what kind of wine they'd like to buy and help target marketing. Fascinating concept, especially in a wine region like San Luis Obispo and Santa Barbara counties. And we'll get into what that company is in a couple of minutes. Eric Adler is the CEO of Flume. It's an innovating water meter attachment. Now, when I first read about this, it seemed like a rather strange thing to need any technology for. But something actually came up in my life a few years ago that put it in the category of, boy, if I'd had that particular piece of apparatus, my life would be a lot, a little bit less crazy a few years ago. So we'll get into that in a little bit. Todd, let's start with you. Give us some background on the evolution of the start of this center and how it evolved and where it is now.
The center started about 5 years ago. Cal Poly professor named of Lou Tarnowski decided that they needed to expand the entrepreneurship program on campus. And in conjunction with that, he wanted to create a center outside of campus that also helped people learn the skills about business building. He co-founded the center with John York, who is our current academic director. The two of them literally built the center from scratch. They didn't ask permission. They didn't play by the rules. They just got out there and created a really amazing dynamic program, both for students on campus, but also in the community at large. And the great thing about the center is it's almost experienced entrepreneurship growth, entrepreneurial growth. We're always looking for hockey stick growth. When you look at entrepreneurship, you're always looking for opportunities that are shaped like a hockey stick. So they get that small start in the beginning, and then they shoot up, they rocket up. And we're experiencing that rocket up phase right now. Our program gets bigger every year. 2 years ago in our accelerator program, for example, we had 8 student-led companies. Last year we had 16 student-led companies. Now we're moving into a new space, 50,000 square feet, which we'll be able to incubate and accelerate ever more companies than before.
When you say student-led companies, we're talking about companies that actually have started as companies. This is not an experiment or a student project. This is an actual, the starting of a company that's actually functioning as a company, not as someone's let's see if this will work project.
Sometimes it starts on the campus, in the classroom, or in the services we provide on campus, such as the hatchery. So it often starts as an idea, a project, a senior project. For example, I think Flume started as a senior project. Yeah. And but then we provide resources to take that project, that idea, that spark, and turn it into a full-fledged business where you make money, you hire people, and do all the things that mature business people do.
You know, before we go any further, I did forget that I need to remind our listeners that this is a call-in program, and we want you to be part of the discussion. We've got, you know, Cal Poly specialists here and innovators. And so we've got them cornered, and they'll take your questions or your comments. Our phone number is 805-781-3875. That's 781-3875. I would encourage you to call early. We oftentimes have callers that call at the very last minute of the program, and we can't quite get their call in. So please be part of this discussion, because this is obviously a community project and a far-reaching type of a new way of looking at technology. You mentioned, Todd, specifically the concept of incubating.
Yeah.
Okay. You want to define how you incubate a company.
It's sort of like a buzzword around entrepreneurship. The programs that often associate entrepreneurship centers are accelerators. And the idea behind an accelerator is take an immature or a young idea and get it up to business speed fast. So our accelerator program, for example, is a 3-month program over the summer. We start with student-led businesses that have pretty much – they just have an idea, and they're in search of their business model. And we put them through the paces. It's kind of a business boot camp. We describe our accelerator program as kind of like getting your MBA in 3 months. So that speeds it up. Incubates the next stage. So now you have a business. Now what are you going to do? And so our incubator program is 2 years of support and service. We provide mentorship, workshops. We provide workspace, free Wi-Fi, things like that, to sort of have a soft entry into market. We start out by charging our incubating companies very low fees to use the space and have access to the programming. And every 6 months, we double, essentially, their rent. So by the time the 2 years is up, they're ready to go out into the market.
Double their rent. That's kind of the way, making sure they it's like kind of like when you have kids, if you cut their allowance back, sooner or later they find their
own. We got to kick them out of the nest at some point.
Okay. Eric, let's start with you as far as looking at the what you've done, because Todd mentioned that this started as a senior project.
Right.
There's this thing. All of us think that everything at Cal Poly somehow starts as a senior project. But how did this start?
So I guess the real initiation of the company started about a year ago when I was just watching a friend wash dishes in our household. And in California, you're constantly hearing about the drought we're in, all the problems we're facing with water. And we didn't have a dishwasher at the time because we're poor college kids. And he was just wasting a ton of water, washing dishes, walking to the side of the room, seeing water flowing. And I was just thinking there's absolutely no way for him to know how much water he's using right now. He could be using 1 gallon per minute. He could be using 10 gallons. There's no real way of quantifying that. And so I was trying to think if there was any way of showing some sort of gauge of how much he was using. And at first, I didn't really think it was that great of an idea. It didn't seem that useful. And I started talking to some friends about it, and we realized that, you know, you get notifications about everything in your life these days. You get a notification about your email or a Snapchat or something. You know, your phone is just there for everything in your life, but there's no way to know how much water you're using or if you have a broken pipe. And so it seemed pretty ridiculous that we don't have that technology yet. And we convinced Thomas Katona, who I'm giving a little plug to right now, probably happy, I'm sure he's listening right now, to let us take this idea on as a senior project. And he dealt with us for an entire year, and it was a constant back and forth between him telling us we're not doing good enough and then us coming back and trying to do better and better and better. And he convinced us to take this idea from senior project through a program called Innovation Quest, which is a contest at Cal Poly that we entered. And it's a kind of like an idea contest, and they also take the viability of your idea into account. And through that, we got second place, third place. It was, I'm not sure exactly what we got, but we won some money through that. And then got accepted into the accelerator program through CIE. And at that point, you know, they still don't really have much confidence in you because it's like, okay, you show that you have some technology working, but do you have any sort of business behind it? And I always thought I was a bit business-minded, but that doesn't really mean anything until you actually go in and try to figure out what it means to actually run a business and what that takes. And the accelerator really taught us a lot, and now we've made it through that and are on to the incubating phase where we have office space and are building the company.
Okay. Thinking about the technology you're working with, okay, the the part of it that's directly related to an app for a phone or an app for a computer, that's technology that you can sit down with software developers and pretty much work through directly without a whole lot of capital other than the cost of people working on the software.
Right, right.
What do you do for the mechanical part of a project like that? Because obviously if you're going to measure water flow in from a water meter, I can tell you the water meter at my house has no electrical connections to it at all. It's a spinning little dial that just gets dirty with a lot of debris from animals and the elements. So how do you address that part of the technology?
Right. So the technology that is being used by the water utilities right now for the vast majority of the United States is a technology that's been around for 50, 60, 70 years.
Your kind. Like probably 150.
Okay. Yeah, probably 150. I mean, it's literally a box that water travels through, and it's analog. It's a little dial on top. What we're actually utilizing, though, is that when the water goes through that meter, there's a small magnet that spins inside. And we are not measuring the flow of water. We're actually measuring a change in magnetic field. And by doing so, we can correlate that to flow rate and in turn get gallon usage out of that. And so our device is actually a small magnetometer sensor that simply attaches to the side of your current water meter without actually having to cut any pipes. And the development with that, the guy who's taking that on right now as our main electrical engineer is Jeff Hufford. He's a co-founder of ours. And he is literally in the office 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. He'll walk in the morning. He was up till 4 a.m.
Somebody throw him food occasionally?
We throw him a bone every now and then to keep him alive. But he's there working tirelessly, and we are in the process of actually hiring a couple more employees to help him out now that we have some funding secured.
I mentioned during the intro that I would have never thought this was really a critical factor until I thought back about something that happened about 6 or 7 years ago, and that was we basically had a blowout of a tree root broke off the water pipe coming into our house.
Right.
And it occurred to me that if I could now, after looking at what you're doing, if I had an app on my phone and when I'm away on vacation and I discover all of a sudden the flow rate that should be almost at zero is it's 80 gallons a minute, there's a pretty easy way to tell something's wrong. So obviously this is part of what this technology would look at.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you could be gone on vacation, or you could just be at the office, or you could be in your house. And if a pipe broke or an irrigation line broke, you'd be notified immediately instead of waiting, days, weeks, a month, using thousands of gallons of water and getting a massive bill.
Okay. Alrighty, thanks. We'll get back to that a little bit more.
Yeah, thank you.
Katerina, we haven't chatted with you yet, and I'm glad you're here. You have a company called Bottlefly. Why don't you start by giving us some of the evolution of how it started, and we'll go from there.
Yeah, so I was actually studying chemistry at Cal Poly, and then I got bitten by the wine bug and just fell in love with the wine industry. But I realized that the chemist in me was really frustrated with how subjective things were in the wine world. You know, everyone has their own opinion about something, and I just kind of really wanted to objectify it. So I took 140 wines and I measured the chemical makeup of those wines and built a really unique recommendation system. But I originally kind of had a problem, so I went to a professor at the computer science department, and they're not really used to talking to, like, the chemists or people from the wine and vit department. And I said, "Professor, I have a problem. Can you help me?" And he said, "Well, actually, you have a breakthrough in the field for the field of artificial intelligence, and I'd like to work with you and develop this further." And they've been working with us ever since last November. So what we do is we recommend wine and other products like food or, you know, coffee, beer, tea, based on your inherent flavor preferences and the context. So, like, your mood or what occasion goes with that product. So that's how it started. And even before that, I applied to, was it 2014, Innovation Quest? And it was just a totally different idea than from what it is now. And it's evolved and developed over the past year into, what it is now.
Well, when I first met you guys, you were in the hatchery.
Yeah.
And you were going to be Pandora for wine.
Yeah, we were going to be Pandora
you've
for wine.
Pandora for wine. Okay, interesting. Okay, explain Pandora for wine then.
Well,
that was the initial idea. Okay. It's come a long way since then.
Okay. Talking about Pandora, the music app.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah. So we were just going to recommend wine based off knowing what wine you drank before, but we realized that, you know, 45% of people who drink wine in the U.S. They're not connoisseurs and they don't really know what they're drinking. So we developed a 6-question quiz that asks questions like, how do you like your coffee? Do you prefer apples or grapefruit and things like that, so that we can get, you know, the more novice drinkers to and personalize their palate. Yeah.
Okay. We'll get back to that in a second. I want to remind folks that we are talking today with some innovators and entrepreneurs who are part of a wonderful program called the Innovation and Entrepreneurship Center at Cal Poly, CIE for short. And we would like to have you give us a call if you'd like and maybe pose some questions or observations to our guests. They're all young, innovative people, and they're looking at ways of expanding what goes on in both our community and our business world. Give us a call at 781-3875. That's 805-781-3875. This is Community Radio KCBX, Public Radio KCBX, and we are part of the community that you're a part of. We'd like you to be part of the discussion. Katerina, let's get back to this. In order to make a business work, you have to have a way of generating some revenue.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. We all know about some businesses that get started that say, this is really great and everybody loves it, but nobody knows how to pay for it.
Mm-hmm.
So what are you looking at from a standpoint of how to make this a viable product? Who would pay for it? Who would find a financial or economic benefit from using it?
Okay. So we found that the biggest problem is actually for supermarkets. If you go into a supermarket, you see that there's so much shelf space dedicated to wine. And there's a reason for that. It's the highest margin item in the store. You know, the average margin for food products in supermarkets is 1, maybe 2%. But for alcohol, it's 30%, usually more. So anything that makes people more confident in, you know, the wine they're buying is a very good thing. Not to mention, from our customer development, we found there's so much money that is spent on training staff in the store on wine. And usually the high turnover rate of employees means that no one knows anything about wine to help the customer. So what we do is we work with retailers, and our software recommends the products that are in the store through a kiosk that's installed at the end of a wine aisle, and it will tell you what's in the store that's in your price range.
Okay. So what I'm going to tell you, but before I get to that kiosk, am I going to fill out a questionnaire through my phone or something, or can I do it at the kiosk?
You can do it at the kiosk. You can also download the app, but the kiosk is always available in the store, and it will tell you about other promotions that are going on in the store. For example, if you select a wine, it will tell you what cheese pairs with it in the store or with the meat in aisle four or something like that. So it's also store specific. So
and the desire is for the supermarket then mm-hmm. to see a value that they're going to sell more wine by using your technology.
Yeah, sell more wine and higher margin items, and also just improve the shopping experience for their customers. And also in a way, we're solving the modern problem of too many choices. You know, it's just, what is it called, like decision stress.
Yes.
There's no point in having hundreds and thousands of products and brands and labels if you can't find what you actually want. When you go into a store, it's like searching for a needle in a haystack sometimes. And we think we're solving this product not just for wine, but thousands of brands of a lot of stuff that's out there now. Yeah.
Yeah. What happened to the original project that you were heading towards?
It was
the chemistry project.
Well, we're still using we're still using chemistry. Actually, we're looking at over 400 chemical compounds found in wine and other food products. It's just a lot more extensive now. We think the answer is in the chemistry for mm-hmm. what we're doing.
How far or how long are you from getting to the point where this is actually a product that you can put in a market?
We're currently talking with a major retail chain based in California, and we're hoping to launch by early next year.
Good. Okay. We'll get back to that in a second. Let's see, we have Sandy on the line. Sandy, are you there?
I am. Can you hear me, Fred?
Yes, I can hear you. Go ahead.
Good. Well, you know, I like supporting students, and I like supporting innovation, but even more, I like growing companies in our community so that when we have good ideas, we don't lose them because they get bought out and moved to Las Vegas or someplace cheaper. And can somebody from CIE talk about that as maybe what the city's doing to support the CIE or the county?
Okay. Can you hear us on the radio so you can take the answer offline?
I can't.
Okay. Okay, thank you. Jump in, Todd.
That's a big part of what we do. We are creating businesses locally. Our mission is to help the Cal Poly student become entrepreneurs and start businesses. Where they end up with those businesses is kind of up to them. But we, because the CIE is located downtown, because we do incubate them there for 2 years, a lot of the companies that come out of the CIE incubator program do become local businesses. We are graduating two companies this December that are moving out of the incubator program, and they both plan on staying in the area. So we do occasionally lose businesses to the Bay Area or talent to the Bay Area, but we really are working hard to keep those locally. And we're getting a lot of support from the city and the county. We're getting money from the city and the county explicitly towards that purpose to make sure that we provide support to these companies, make sure that they survive the scary stage of early development, and then stick around and hire local people.
Okay.
I would actually like to attest to that. We are currently talking to investors from the Bay, and they're totally okay with us staying local. And it's to our advantage to stay local because, well, for our company specifically, we're right in the heart of a major wine region. Another thing is we have access to really good talent here. And it's not like in the Bay, there's kind of like this revolving door mentality there. We don't have that here. We can retain our people really well. And you know, especially the computer science department, we just constantly have support and access to all these talented mm-hmm. students. People want a reason to stay in SLO. So we're really happy. We've already created 8 jobs, and everyone intends to stay. So
it's good. All you have to do is look at the housing cost in Silicon Valley and San Francisco, and that becomes a big factor also. Yeah. There's been this presumption for years that there was no viable way to operate a significant international business out of San Luis Obispo County. I think we've seen some exceptions to that. One that comes to mind is MindBody, which is primarily technology driven, as both of your companies are here too. Let's go. We have another caller for Evan. Are you there?
Yes.
Okay. What are your comments or observations or questions?
Yeah, so I just had a question for both Flume and Bottlefly. You know, how did you guys get involved with the Center of Innovation and Entrepreneurship? And the other question I had was for Flume. You know, I'm just trying to wrap my head around, you know, how it's, you know, installed. Like, do you have to cut pipes in order for you know, your system to measure water, or, you know, what do I have to do as a homeowner?
Right, right. I'd be glad to talk about that. Thanks for the question. So first of all, how we got involved with the Center for Innovation Entrepreneurship. I think you touched on that a bit at the beginning, but you know, this began as a senior project. We went and took it through a contest called Innovation Quest at Cal Poly, and then through that, we were encouraged to apply to the accelerator program through the Slo Hothouse. And once we got into that, you know, we got some seed funding from them, and we're able to really build our whole business plan over the summer, learn basically a very minor MBA and kind of get an understanding of what it takes to run the business before becoming part of the incubator program, which is where we are right now. And then to address the product side, so in terms of installing our device, pretty much every home has, the vast majority of homes in the United States have a meter, a water meter attached to them, and they're on city water. And all you have to do is actually go out there and go into the meter pit, which may be a little bit dirty, but the installation process, it takes no pipes being cut. You simply have to take our little device, a sensor, and strap it around your current water meter. It's non-invasive, just touches the side of the water meter and reads that little magnetic field as a magnet spins inside of the water meter. We turn that into a gallon usage amount and send it off to a base unit in the house, which then communicates with the cloud server and is accessed on an application on your iPhone, Android, computer, whichever device you choose to use.
Yeah. Actually, an observation for you on that, mm-hmm. and that is, I believe that anybody who has a water softener in their house already has something like that functioning in there. Because as you'd explain this, the sensor that tells me how many gallons my water softener goes through before it recycles is the exact technology you're talking about. So the technology's been used for a long time, but not in the focus that you're using it.
Not in the focus of actually telling people how much they are using. So that is our goal here, to give them more information.
Okay, Todd, let's get back to the concept of, we have two great ideas, and as is said by a lot of people, everybody's got a terrific idea if they could just find somebody to fund it and run with it. So what is the center doing towards helping build capital and find investors for organizations like this?
We have a very large mentor network that we reach out to, not only to invest in the companies, but also to help them through the business process. We're constantly looking for new relationships with investors, both locally and casting a wide net. Investors from Silicon Valley, for example, that might want to come here or have our companies travel them and take a look at their technology. The reality of the situation is that 70% of all venture capital in the world comes out of 3 square miles in Silicon Valley. We do have to reach out to that area in order to build, sort of finance these companies. But we also have some amazing investors and alumni that have come through the center and support the companies at pretty large levels. We have a few alumni from the San Diego area, some from Sacramento, some from the Bay Area that are really involved with the center. And they don't just give their time and talent, they give their treasure and have invested in quite a few companies.
Okay. So we've talked about the fact that this is actually a program in downtown San Luis Obispo. It's not on the campus at Cal Poly. Where is it?
Okay. Actually, a CIE faces two directions. We do have a lot of stuff on campus. We have a hatchery program. We have our academic program.
Define a hatchery.
The hatchery is the name we put onto our incubating program that's on campus. So while you're in school and you're going through your entrepreneurial Vision Quest, you can join the Hatchery. We provide you with 24/7 workspace, mentoring, programming, everything that you would get downtown, but we have it on campus. In fact, we just debuted a new space on campus for the Hatchery. And then we conduct significant events and contests. IQ is one of the contests. We just had our elevator pitch contest two nights ago, in which the first place winner won $1,000. We try to create a lot of different programming on campus to get the entrepreneurial spark going, capture it, blow some air on it, and turn it into a fire.
Okay, I want to get back to that in a second. Okay, Katarina, what's your elevator speech?
You can do it.
Oh, you really want me?
Well,
to.
I really want you to. Yeah, because at this point we're on the elevator. I mean, it really is a very good snapshot of a way to find out about people.
Okay, yeah. Bottlefly or about the CAE? Because I could do both pretty well.
Give us Bottlefly.
Give us Bottlefly.
So, well, have you ever walked into a grocery store and then you to buy a bottle of wine and you stare up at this enormous wall with hundreds of bottles and you try to choose something based off grape variety, appellation, terroir? Is this a good vintage? What's the difference between this 90-point Bordeaux, this 92-point Bordeaux? And then I don't know if you've ever read the back of a wine label, but try to imagine right now what pencil lead or tarn leather, dried violets, or my favorite is cat pee on a gooseberry bush tastes like. It's not, people can't really, I think, relate to that. So what Bottlefly does is it makes your shopping experience much easier by recommending what's in the store based on your mood, price range, special occasion, and things that, you know, with words that you actually use in everyday life and can relate to. So, yeah.
I don't think I've ever seen a reference to cat urine on a wine bottle label. Have you actually? That's a
yeah. It's a popular Sauvignon Blanc reference.
Nice.
Yeah.
not heard that before. Actually, Jordan's in the booth, kind of shaking your head. Yeah, I've heard that one before. Anyway, well, that's very good. Okay, we'll give you equal time, Eric. I want your elevator speech.
Right. Absolutely. So I mean, as you know, California is in a massive state of drought. The majority of the United States is actually in a state of drought, and people have no idea how much water they're actually using on a daily basis, on a weekly basis, or even a monthly basis, because most of these times, you know, you get a water bill every 2 months. And California and Governor Jerry Brown is starting to impose these massive fines statewide and telling people to reduce their consumption by 25%. But it's pretty hard to request people to do that when they have no feedback about how much they're using. And right now, you know, you get information about your electricity usage if you want. You have products like Nest that can tell you how to reduce your heat and cooling load. But there's no way to get feedback about your most precious resource that we use every single day and often multiple times every hour. So we are creating a system that allows you to see how much water you are using in real time, to let you see your historical usage. It will notify you if you have a leak in your home, if you have a broken pipe. It'll even give you an appliance breakdown so you can see, like, my washing machine is using this much water. My dishwasher is using this. And it will also let you know your comparison to kind of everyone else in the neighborhood. You're not going to be able to go drought shame your neighbor with this information, but you'll be able to
drought
see.
Drought shame your neighbor.
Yeah, that's a thing these days. So don't have too green of a lawn out there. Someone might get mad. But it'll give you a comparison of highs and lows and kind of how you're doing compared to the rest of the, let's say, San Luis Obispo.
Good explanation for both of you. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
I want to remind our listeners, we're talking with Todd Nelson, who's the executive director of the Cal Poly Center for Innovation and Entrepreneurship. And we're also talking with Katarina Axelson and Eric Adler. They are both entrepreneurs who are involved with companies that are up and viable now and getting moving. And so we're looking at what's going on in the community to basically build the kind of businesses that we would like to stay in San Luis Obispo or Santa Barbara County. We all probably all have family members that live in Silicon Valley. I have a daughter that lives in San Jose, and every other word out of her mouth is, why in the world can't I afford to live here even though I've got a great job? We talk to people who can't afford to stay there even though they're loving the kind of work they do. So what we can do to keep businesses in San Luis Obispo or Santa Barbara County is a good move. Todd, this is how many companies are you working with right now, or how many startups are you working with right now?
In our incubating program right now, we probably have, I just heard 27's gone, so we probably have 20 companies right now. Mm-hmm. That we have two locations downtown because we're transitioning from one location to another. But between the two locations, we have about 20 companies that are in the incubating program.
Where are you located?
We have a space downtown at 955 Morrow Street. A lot of people know it says a hot house in front. We also just moved into a huge space, or potentially a huge space, above the Ross downtown. So right now we occupy about 7,000 square feet above Ross. It's really exciting up there.
It used to belong to a gaming software company.
Yes, it's Oddworld's
old
space.
Oddworld's old space, yeah.
And
did
then
the pool table stay?
The pool table's gone, but
oh,
there is
darn,
a vampire bat that's stuck around. And then we're hoping to move very soon into the other part of the space that's being earthquake retrofit right now. and it's being delayed a little bit, but we hope to occupy 15,000 square feet downtown. We also are signing a lease in a building, a Blackstone building right across from the Mission, in which we have 32 apartments that are going to house Cal Poly students that are involved in the Entrepreneurship Center, and another 6,000 square feet where we hope to put in a maker space and an ideation, a design lab.
Okay. All righty. We'll get back to that particular topic. I want to make sure we don't make people wait too long on the phone. So, Terry, are you there?
Hey, Fred, this is Terry. I am here.
Yes.
I had a comment for your flume guy.
Go ahead.
It would appear that you're focused more on the end consumer, but I think your quickest market take-up will be with utility companies that are charged with the responsibility of reading meters. I know the city of San Luis Obispo has outsourced their meter reading to the private sector because they could no longer afford to hire people to do it.
Right.
And that's fairly typical of most jurisdictions. In fact, that's why you get a meter reading every 2 months instead of every month. So I would hope you could look to link your system either through a web-based or Wi-Fi-based system, or even link with the smart meter system that PG&E has installed just about everywhere now, and piggyback the data to the utilities.
Okay. Yeah,
good
absolutely.
Point. Thanks for the call, Terry. All
right. Okay, Fred. Talk to you, bye.
Okay.
Yeah, so that is a good point and something that gets brought up quite a bit. When we first started this company, we were looking towards the water utilities and creating a solution for them. And the thing is, right now, there are companies out there like Badger. It's the biggest water meter company in the nation. And they provide water utilities with smart meters. And they've been around for 100 years. And they're just starting to break into the smart meter market right now. And so for a water utility to actually go with a new startup who's making a technology that has not been proven over the past 20 years is a bit of a barrier to entry for us. But what we have realized is that if you're a homeowner and you want to get this technology and you want to be able to see how much water you're using in real time, you have to wait until your city actually rolls these smart meters out, which takes millions of dollars, it takes years, and there's still only about 16% of the California market that actually has smart meters. And what we've realized, there's this whole open marketplace where no one has tapped into yet, enabling a homeowner to see this usage. And so that's the first market we're going into, creating consumer product, enabling homeowners to see their usage. And then eventually down the road, we hope to have a product focused on utilities as well and be able to share this information between the homeowner, the utility, so everyone can kind of combine and help us reduce water consumption statewide, nationwide.
Yeah, and Terry brings up a good point because probably one of your goals is to get into enough households with a product that works and is already installed. And so then when my water utility decides to go to a smart meter, you haven't lost my business because I can just still get the information on my phone or my computer.
Right, right.
Yeah, actually, I don't know if they're doing it everywhere in the county, and sooner or later probably all of Southern California that's on Southern California Gas, now referred to as the Gas Company, sent out letters in the last couple of weeks that they're installing an attachable device to gas meters, and they're advising people that's going to go on also. So there's that's happening.
Right.
Todd, I want to get back to maybe our earlier question on the startup of the hothouse and the startup of you guys. So you've got a facility that you're working with, a facility downtown.
Yes.
Okay. So people can work in it. From what Eric says, he has somebody who probably wants to just live there.
He is living there.
Yeah, he is living there. Okay.
Nearly living there.
You send him out for a bath. Occasionally,
that's what the gym's for.
There's this old adage, and this goes back, to when I was a college student, and that is everybody thinks they've got a great bit of innovation, and no wherewithal or resources to put it together. So what are the first, what are the introductory questions that you ask people who approach you with a project that they want the center to become involved with?
We look at the quality of the idea, the quality and commitment of the team. We also like you to have a team. If you can't convince one other person to believe what you believe, how are you going to convince millions? We also really strongly encourage the teams or the companies to do what we call customer development. The entrepreneurship is sort of flipped how we used to create businesses on its head. It used to be that you'd have an idea, you'd write a business plan, a 5-year business plan, because that's predictable. You would invest your time and your money building that thing, and you'd take it to market. And 80% of the time, those companies fail. So entrepreneurship flips that on its head. Instead of building something and investing in it and taking it to market, you go talk to your customer first. So we really encourage, okay, you've got this great water meter. You think the utility companies are going to buy it. Get out of the building. Go talk to hundreds of people. Ask them really smart questions and find out if there's actually a market. You don't really have anything until people are actually shoving money into your hands to buy your crappy prototype, which is what's happened with Flume. I mean, people say to you all the time, I'll give you $300 for this right now. Give me your prototype.
Yeah, people do want it.
And so they discovered that there's a market for their meter long before they had to invest a dollar into it. Bottlefly did the same thing. They discovered their customer retail stores by getting out of the building and talking to people. Mm-hmm. So once you have that, once you've discovered that product market fit, once you discover there's a market, then it makes sense to start investing in it. You don't necessarily have to invest your own dollars. You can do what these people are doing and go out and find other people to invest in it and fund the growth of the business.
Okay. Well, let's use Bottlefly as an example, because what occurred to me as I'm listening to Todd's explanation and you're explaining your product, is there may be a lot of the physical technology that you need to have in the kiosk or to compile the data may already exist. So what do you do and what do your people do to discover what's already available to you, so you're not building a device from scratch when you discover that it already exists on a shelf someplace?
Right. We make every effort to make sure we're not reinventing the wheel. We have some, unique intellectual property that helps us look at data differently, and it allows us to make recommendations better. We have really enviable technical horsepower that comes from professors from Cal Poly and just our team in general. And part of our unique discovery, and this is something that's never been done before, is we found that the chemistry is connected to the words people use. So like the butter retaste in your popcorn can be associated with the words like warm and indoors. So this just puts a whole new way of looking at data that's already out there in a different light. So yeah, we made sure that we can provide value that way. Hmm.
Well, and I'll pose it to both Katarina and Eric too. Where did you, or how did you decide what would be a name for your company or your product that would be a good hook for both your customers and for your funding?
We just kind of wanted to keep it simple, and when we first. It honestly came from pronouncing another name wrong. And then we were like, Flume. And we're
like
okay, wait a minute.
Like spelling Google wrong.
Yeah, okay, it's like, okay, wait a minute. There's potential here. And it's Flume, in case you listeners out there have trouble knowing. And also you might know of a log flume. Yes. And so it kind of correlates with water going through a channel. It worked well. It's one syllable. We're able to
incorporate. Yeah, my first thought was
that.
A flume ride at an amusement
like a
park.
Ride,
but that,
yeah.
Okay.
So that's kind of where it came from, more or less.
Okay, good.
Yeah. We're actually looking to change our name because it's the name it's the name we came up with before we pivoted from our original idea, which was selling and recommending wine online. And the idea is you get bottles to fly off the shelf, like bottle fly. But we're definitely looking to change that now. And I use this example all the time. I don't really care what our name is, especially as a software company. But people say, like Pandora, when the Pandora founders were interviewed and they were asked, how did you come up with this name? What does it mean? What does it represent? They just said, I don't know. It just sounds cool. I think if you have a good product, your name will get out there regardless. So
Google just changed their name to Alphabet.
Alphabet.
So it's never too late.
The holding company has changed. Yeah. Okay, we've got a few calls. I want to make sure we get to everybody too. James, are you there?
Hey, how's it going?
Pretty good. What's up?
Hey, great program. Sounds like an awesome resource for Cal Poly students, and I love both these ideas. So how do I sign up, say, for Flume or receive updates about Bottlefly? Is there a website I can go to?
Yeah.
And they paid you to call in, right? Go ahead. Okay.
Not.
Todd, where's the, what's the, well, how about we try and find one central spot that you can find all the companies you're working with? Is there a central website?
Yeah, just Google Cal Poly CIE. You'll find everything that we do. But these guys have their specific company websites that they would love to direct you to.
Right. So if you want to hear more information about Flume, go to flumetech.com. That's FLUMETECH.com. You can sign up to hear more right there.
Okay, and you can go to thebottlefly.com, bottlefly.com, also on Facebook, and you can also email kat at thebottlefly.com.
Okay. Todd, let me get back to it. What was the website for the actual program so people can find pretty much
just Google CIE and Cal Poly, and you'll get to
Cal
everything
Poly,
that we have.
You
can also,
CIE.
You can also do slowhothouse.com.
Okay, thanks. Okay, let's see. Sarah, are you there?
Yeah, I am.
Okay. What are your questions or thoughts?
Oh, I just wanted to, first of all, say what a great program today. And kudos to you guys at Cal Poly. I'm a Cal Poly graduate, and I spent basically 30 years in the Bay Area in VCs and in entrepreneur companies, so all startups. And I had to tell you, when you said these five-year business plans are a joke, they really are, because they're basically just manufactured information that people do routinely to get funded. And to have those kids going out there and doing market research to see if they've actually got a product that can sell, brilliant. Just kudos to you guys.
Okay. Thank you. Thanks for the call.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay.
Todd, you're doing some things to stretch this out so it does connect more with the general community.
Absolutely.
And what are you doing with that?
We have a couple current programs. We have our SBDC, which is our Small Business Development Center. So anyone in the community that has a small business or a business idea can come in, sign up to be a client, and it's free. And we give them access to a bunch of different resources that are necessary to building a small business. We also have a co-working program. Anyone in the community that doesn't have office space and wants to start up pretty cheaply can come in. We rent out first-come, first-serve office space in our hothouse. We're also about to announce, we've actually announced that we're about to implement our community incubating program. So right now, all the companies in our incubator are Cal Poly graduates, or someone on the team is from Cal Poly. And now you can come and be a part of the incubator program and not be a Cal Poly graduate. So we're going to input maybe 2 to 4 companies from the community that are in startup phase and get them into the building and into the program.
As I've looked at the list, because you gave us a list of some of the incubator companies, and this is what I've got to ask about. And the cardboard guys are building cardboard furniture.
Yes.
Okay. So this is not all about software and general technology, which is kind of neat. But I'm wondering what they're building furniture out of cardboard. They're selling furniture kits out of cardboard, I guess.
They are, and they're doing really well doing that. They're really cool, innovative kits. They are flat pack. They put together like a puzzle. It's a fun project between a parent and a kid. And they're actually really strong, functional furniture that you can draw on and paint on. And what I want to say about the cardboard guys and all the other companies is our incubator reflects the breadth and width of what Cal Poly has to offer. We represent every school on campus. We have people from engineering background, liberal arts background, chemistry backgrounds. So cardboard guys came out of materials material design or something like that, and so we really
industrial technology. Yeah.
Thank you. So we really, you know, we don't want to focus on just one thing Cal Poly does well. We want to show everything that Cal Poly does well, and when we create the community incubating program, it's going to be the same thing. We'll reflect the overall talent of the SLO and Santa Barbara communities.
Are there resources within your program for lack of a better word, a support group? In other words, if I've got an idea and I haven't had much of a chance to work with people in technology, but I want to go with it, are a lot of your people willing to sit down? Okay, if you buy the coffee and pizza today, we'll sit down and have a discussion on how your idea might look.
Yeah, you just described a good portion of my job.
Buying the pizza.
No, we have many opportunities for students, especially students and community members, to come in and engage us on their ideas and our help and our mentorship and our programming and everything that we do.
Yeah,
and the advisors that we've gotten, because right now we have an advisory board, And that has consisted of, you know, our senior project advisor, and then we've also gotten two other advisors from the CIE program who we've met through that, and another one who is correlated to Cal Poly. So all these advisors have kind of come through being involved with the Hothouse and the CIE program.
Wow, there, you covered a lot of territory, and we've got a few more minutes. I still have more questions. Where do you see a company, and this is, I guess, primarily to Katerina and to Eric, where do you see your company stepping off and being a standalone, if you will, without being part of this program? I'm not necessarily saying that you wouldn't be continuing to have a symbiotic relationship with a program like this, but at some point you want to say, okay, I need my own facility, I want to be off doing it, and I'm ready now.
Mm-hmm. When we can no longer fit our people into the space, I think, which, I mean, would be a really good problem to have. Yeah, that's my answer.
Yeah, the rent right now is pretty appetizing at $100 a month. So that's, you know, we want to stick around there while we can.
But how often does it double?
It doubles every 6 months. We can handle $200 a month after that for a while. But we're hoping that within a year, you know, we're starting to hire right now and grow. And eventually, like Katerina said, we're going to run out of space, and it's a great problem. And we can't wait to, you know, expand and stay in SLO instead of moving up to the Bay or LA.
Okay. Yeah. Silly side question, Todd, or to me, it's a silly side question, maybe, and that is, how do the people working there make sure that their proprietary information is protected in an environment that has this much sharing? I think it's wonderful that the sharing can go on, mm-hmm. but not everybody is conscious of their boundaries as they may need to
be. Yeah, I think if you have any IP that you need to keep secret from other people in the incubator, you got to get a locked door somewhere. Mm-hmm. We don't have too much of that. Also, it's a very collaborative, very supportive environment. The companies in the program don't really view each other as competitors mm-hmm. as much as resources. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of collaboration, someone's really good at SEO, they teach someone else how to do it. Someone's really good at design, they teach all the teams how to do it. Someone's really good at content marketing, they teach other people how to do it. So they're helping each other.
We're down to a few minutes, and entrepreneurs always want to have the last word, but since there's four of us in the room, we don't all get the last word. But I wanted you all have an opportunity to maybe give us an understanding of what this has meant to you and what you're doing with it. So, Eric, let me start with you. Give me an idea of where you're heading and where you've been with this so far.
So, it's pretty exciting that we've come, you know, from starting out as a senior project to where we are today. And in the future, you know, right now we have some funding secured. We're beginning to raise more funding and begin the hiring process, which is pretty awesome to be on the other side of the table instead of, you know, dressing up and putting your application out there. So it's great to be interviewing some incredible talent and working with people locally in SLO. And we're starting to grow, hire more. We're going to be doing a beta test here in San Luis Obispo at the beginning of next year on 50 homes. So if you're actually interested in partaking in that, you can reach out to us as well. And then following that, we will be doing a crowdfunding campaign in order to raise consumer awareness and market our product nationwide. And in about 1 year, at the beginning of 2017, we're planning on having our product available for purchase by all of you guys. So please go to the website, check it out, and sign up, and we'll keep you posted on our progress.
And you promised us that it's something that we can pretty much install ourselves without having to cut any water pipes.
Yeah, if you can screw in a light bulb, you should be able to put this in.
that may be a bad analogy. Okay. Katerina.
Well, I would like to say if you're listening to this and you're 21 or older, you can email kat@thebottlefly.com and sign up to be a beta taster, is what we call you. And we always need new subjects to try wine and give us feedback. Another thing I want to say about the Hothouse is the real value it brings is it's this community where people are doing what you're doing or have done what you're doing, and that makes all the difference, I think. The best way to operate and run a business is to operate and run a business, and it's really going with the whole Cal Poly spirit of, learn by doing. So that's what we do. That's how we do it. Yeah.
That's great. Yeah. Todd. I guess I have a question that I'm curious about. Yeah. Are there any of the companies that you're working with right now that did not specifically come out of Cal Poly? because you've talked about being on working with the broader community.
None of the companies in the incubating program came from Cal Poly. However, we do have companies in the building that either work through the SBDC or through our co-working program that are independent of Cal Poly.
Mm-hmm. So for those of us who've been listening for the last hour, what is the best long elevator speech you can give us as to why more people should become involved with this program for you?
Well, we're building
on both sides.
I think we're building the economic future of this area. I mean, it's going to just grow every year and get bigger and better. And we train our companies that when they're pitching or elevator pitching, they need to end with an ask. And I'm going to be shameless and end with an ask. We need –
Well,
need,
be shameless.
Need,
people are shameless on
more.
My program all the time.
Yeah,
yes.
We're almost 100% donor funded. We have some amazing donors from our alumni support group, also from the community. We need more. What we do costs a lot of money. We just moved into a new space. Excuse me. And so we really need the support of the community and of our alumni. So if you are excited by this program, come by and help us out. We don't just need money either. We need mentors. We need connections. We need industry expertise. I would love the caller. I think her name was Sarah, who has VC connections in the Bay Area, called earlier. We would love you to come by the hot house and talk to us. So if you do...
Sarah, if you heard that, they would like to talk to you.
Yeah.
Funding sources are critical.
So, but we also depend on the sweat equity of many people in the community. So our doors are open. Please come by and talk to us.
Hmm. You are a nonprofit. So you're a standalone nonprofit.
Cal Poly is the Foundation of Cal Poly is a nonprofit that supports us. Mm-hmm. And we operate under their umbrella.
Okay, fascinating program. I think this is. I want to. There's a picture on a flyer that you guys sent me about the cardboard guys. Three reasonably reasonably mature looking college age guys building cardboard furniture, and it's
You can buy it.
It's fast. They're actually already selling the
They're selling it online, yeah. And they can buy it at a local store. Eco Bambino, I think, is carrying it.
Oh.
And Tom's Toys is carrying it. So
interesting.
There's even a company making booze in the hot house. Yeah. Well, not technically in the hot house, but they are working.
Okay.
They're developing outside.
Yeah, we're running
inside.
Out of time. Yeah, okay. So, okay, yes. Yeah, Todd just got a look on his face like, boy, we could have ended on some of anyway. I want to thank you all. This has been a wonderful discussion and a delightful way to look at what's going on in our community. Obviously, San Luis Obispo County is an innovative environment with Cal Poly there, and it's good to have innovative entrepreneurs because innovation without something behind it to make it successful in public is just innovation that sits in somebody's pocket. And a good portion of us have projects like that never got anywhere. So it's good to see what this is doing here. I want to remind you, this has been Central Coast Voices, and we're a production of Action for Healthy Communities, a project of the Community Foundation of San Luis Obispo County. Next week, Chris Kington Barker will be with you, and she's bringing you a fascinating program as the baby boomer generation, of which I'm the only one of the four in the room that falls in that category, begin to struggle with aging and issues related to end of life. There's a lot of things going on. There's a movement dealing with such things as death cafes and home funerals and green burials. And next week, Chris Kington Barker will be speaking with Dr. Karen Wyatt, a family physician who spends many years of her medical career caring for hospice patients. Dr. Wyatt will be with Chris Kington Barker, and they'll be discussing pretty much how dying and issues relating to dying are affecting a growing population of us baby boomers. Dr. Wyatt has a book out, What Really Matters, 7 Lessons for Living from the Stories of the Dying. It should be fascinating. This has been Central Coast Voices, and I want to thank both KCBX for helping sponsor this program and Joan Gillard-Sargent for underwriting it. And if you want to give us a call, you can give us a call at 543-2323 with topics and suggestions for the program. This has been Central Coast Voices. Thank you for joining us.